Welcome back to another episode of Schnepps Connects. I'm thrilled to have with me today New York City Mayor Eric Adams. The mayor and I know each other from when he entered Brooklyn Borough Hall as the borough president about maybe 10 years ago now. He's certainly been through a lot in his first term as mayor of New York City, but he's also had a lot of major accomplishments, including navigating our city through COVID, bringing crime down, and passing legislation to get more desperately needed housing built in the city. My conversation is going to be with him about his current term, as well as him running for office as an independent in the upcoming November election. Hope you enjoy this episode.
Mayor Eric Adams, it's great to have you join me on Schnepps Connects. I really want to start off by first thanking you for your strong support of the Jewish community. You know, we've faced a lot of anti-Semitism, and you've been there from the beginning. You made sure Central Park would not host an anti-Israel singer who was previously banned from performing at Cornell University due to her anti-Semitic statements. So I appreciate it. I hope the people in New York City appreciate it. Hope we don't forget when the leaders step up during times of need. You know, I feel like that's when people really have to appreciate their leadership, is when they're needed most. You and I, you know, obviously go back to your days as Brooklyn Borough President, and I've seen firsthand your true passion for New York City. I mean, I think that's one of the things I realized from you immediately is the energy and the connection you had with people. Whenever you go to an event, people wait online to take pictures with you. And you never were shy about your dream. Your dream, you know, I think you communicated even early in your career, was to be the mayor of New York City. And I have to imagine in the role as mayor of New York City, a national spotlight, that you expect to be challenged. You expect that that's part of the job. But you've really been through so much in just your first term. And I think, you know, one of the questions I had just really, you know, thinking about it is, after being through everything you've been through, is this still your dream job?
Oh, no, without a doubt. And I think about it, I know that I remember when your children were born.
Yes.
So think about, you know, going through the night, they wake up, you have to lose sleep, you know, going through those doctor's appointments. I think about with Jordan, taking him back and forth to the doctors. He had allergies, so we had to be concerned about what he consumed, watching him around the house so he doesn't stick a piece of wire in the plug and, you know, harm himself or tripping and falling. Being a parent is challenging. But when you look at all of that, I don't think I have ever met one parent that say, you know what, I'll take all those challenges, because watching the development and nurturing the growth of my child and watching them as they make their accomplishments, the first steps, the first sound, the first voice, graduating from school, you say, you know what, all those challenges are worthwhile. And that's how I feel about this city. There's a lot of challenges being the mayor. There's a lot coming at you. You're under scrutiny constantly. You have to make sure that the city continues to move forward. And, you know, many people walk away and say, man, I don't know how you would do a job like this. But when I look at the success, more jobs in the city, history, what we're doing with dyslexia, something that I struggled with, and we're now going after to help young people with it, how we're giving free high-speed broadband and NYCHA residents, how we're bringing down crime, saving lives, how we're collaborating with our federal partners to go after those who are dangerous in the city. All of those challenges that you have, you sit back and you have to say to yourself, this is a good feeling. You wanted to be mayor. You are the mayor, and you're making real impacts on the lives of everyday New Yorkers. I would not do anything to get in the way of continuing to fight on behalf of New Yorkers. I'll take it all because it's worthwhile.
Well, I wasn't expecting a different answer, but it's really great to hear it from you. You know, being in local media myself, you know, my mom started one newspaper. We're talking now on my podcast. The diversity of media has changed so much. The way in which I imagine as being mayor of New York City and the ways in which you can communicate to the general public has changed so much. I'm curious how your relationship with media has evolved during your tenure and really, you know, being in the spotlight here in the city, across the nation.
You know, you have ball players who, or I should say athletes, and by the way, let's go Knicks, but you have athletes who won't play in New York. They say the fans are tough, the media scrutinize you. You could have a great year in sports, but you blow one game that, you know, the media is tough, won't let you ever live it down. So this is a tough market, and you really have to stomach for it. And I think that what has helped me a lot were my years as a police officer. You are, you know, constantly under scrutiny and criticism from the public. No one is going to invite you to a birthday party after you give them a summons, or after you tell them they can't stand somewhere, they have to move in another location. So I'm used to that scrutiny. But the industry has changed a lot. What I have found based on my observation is, number one, the mere fact we're talking on podcasts. I can remember the first time we heard podcasts. It was like, what is that? Mm-hmm. And now it seems as though podcasts are becoming the brand that people want to be a part of, because it gives you an opportunity not to live in sound bites, but it gives you an opportunity to real tell your true long-handed narrative. But not only that, I think that many Americans have become distrustful of the media. I think that when you look at poll after poll, survey after survey, of many Americans and New Yorkers have lost their trust in the media. And I think for a number of things, you could look at even that they stated, some of the media stated at the White House correspondent dinner, how they did not report the condition of President Biden. They knew it, they saw it, and they just chose not to report it. But also, back when I was growing up and reading the newspapers and some of the great columnists of the day, there was a separation. Columnists had the opinions. Editorial boards and columnists did the opinions. Reporters just covered the news. They would give you the facts based on what it is. And I think they've crossed the line. I think you have a great deal of reporters that are not just covering the news. They're putting their personal interpretation in the stories that they're covering. And I think the stories are distorted. Something simple as bike lanes. We have done a great job with bike lanes in the city. But if you're a reporter that strongly believes that the whole city should be bike lanes and there should be no vehicles anywhere, you're going to write your stories to have that distorted view. And you really want to, you're going to ignore New Yorkers that still drive. And so I'm just using that as an example. I think it's crucial that we get back into the business of reporting the news and not let the columnists be the columnists and report the news the way it is and just give the people the facts. And balanced reporting. What does balanced reporting look like to me? Listen, critique our administration for what we do wrong. Point out our actions that are improper. But let's cover the news. Let's cover the fact that we brought back more jobs in the city's history. Let's cover the fact that we developed more housing in individual years in the history of the city, or some of the great things that are happening to the city, because people read our newspapers, they read the stories, and they determine how well the city is doing. And, you know, Josh, this city has recovered. They told me it was going to take me 5 years and 2.5 years. We recovered this city in so many ways, but you wouldn't think about it if you were to read our tabloids. And that's what I think is different. And lastly, you know what was interesting to me? I was at my old high school, Bayside High School, where I grew up in Queens. Yep. And I went around the room, and as the reporters asked questions, I said, tell us what high school you went to. And almost 70% of the people in the room didn't grow up in New York. They don't know what New York used to look like. They don't know the graffiti-written trains. They don't know about the heroin.
Times Square was scary place.
Right. They don't know about the crack cocaine epidemic. They don't know about, you know, what it was growing up, you know, during this city. So it's almost difficult for them to have a real comparison to what I remember as the New York and what I'm seeing now. And I think that that has a lot to do with how news reported in this city.
Well, it's interesting. You know, I think about a lot of young people that have not seen a scary New York City, and those people could be in their late 20s, early 30s, perhaps, and not realize that, hey, you know, there is a time and place that if you didn't have the proper police force, that it was not a safe city. So right. Sometimes I feel like people that are younger, you know, don't have the benefit of experience to understand that, yes, things can get bad.
Yes. And if you don't realize that, you know, so when we talk about, hey, we need a gang database to prevent retaliatory shooters and identify gang members, you'll say to yourself, oh, well, what's so big about a gang member? You know, we say that we need to make sure that we have real controls over our vendors. through the city, so they're not just all over our city. If you don't know what that disorder looks like, it's difficult for you to have a point of reference. And it's imperative that those of us who live through those moments continue to educate people about them. We can't go backwards. Our city must go and move in the right direction.
So let's talk about other challenges. I mean, what would you say are or were your biggest challenges in this first term?
Three things that really overshadowed my success, because we have been extremely successful by all metrics. Even individual bond raters have raised our bonds and continue to show that no matter what this mayor has to face, he has used his strength to navigate this city to recover the economy. But there are three things that I believe have highlighted our success and some of the challenges. Number one, COVID. COVID was a real challenge. Retail shops were closed. People were not returning to work. We were facing real issues on how do we get the city stabilized and get people back into office spaces and redefine what remote work looks like. And so COVID was a real challenge. And we did that. We were very clear children had to be in school. That was the safest place. We got a lot of pushback, but we were strong on it with the deal with the vaccine issue. And so we navigated through COVID so well that nobody talks about it anymore. You know, it was as though it never happened. You know, the second were the migrants and asylum seekers. Josh, 230,000 people came into our city, and the federal government did not allow me to stop the buses from coming in. They did not allow me to give people the ability to work. It was against federal law. They didn't even allow me to allow people to volunteer and give them a stipend. That was against federal law. And city law required me to house, feed, clothe those who needed clothing, wash their clothing, educate 40,000 children. City law required these things. And so I had to carry out the function and finding the dollars to do so. We spend $7.5 billion with a B on a migrant and asylum seeker, and I had to balance that. We only got about $200 million from the federal government to go with that. And so it was a real challenge. And lastly, this bogus criminal case that I faced. It was very difficult. It was a difficult 12 or 15 months for me. I knew I did nothing wrong. Were there people that I trusted and did things that were improper, that were volunteers in our campaign? Yes. Then according to what I have read, that they did things that were wrong. But my highest staff, I did nothing wrong. And I strongly believe it was retaliatory because of me fighting for the people of this city during the migrants and asylum seeker crisis. But those were three major issues that impacted and overshadowed the success of this administration.
Yeah, it really was impactful to have all these migrants come to the city and not being allowed to work. Seems to not make sense, because what else are they supposed to do?
Right. You know, think about that for a moment. You come to the city 18 to 24 years old. You're told you have to sit around all day, every day. Can't provide for your family. If you're an adult with children, you can't provide for your family. We used to go through some of the herks, and you'll see thousands of people just sitting around all day. It just made no sense at all. And we couldn't get through to the previous administration that this is not something we should be doing. Let's at least allow people even to volunteer and get a stipend. They wanted to remove graffiti, clean our streets, and give back to the city, and they were not allowed to do so. It creates underground black markets. It creates the potentiality of sex trafficking. It creates, you know, just unsanitary conditions. And it was just a bad decision by the previous administration not to handle this correctly, not to secure our borders, and not to make sure whomever is within our borders have the opportunity to pursue the American dream.
You know, one of the things that you also have to do is, I consider it like a high wire act, right? Because New York is a sanctuary city. And as a sanctuary city, I think all sanctuary cities are going to be in a bullseye of the federal government. So how do you manage as a mayor of New York City between protecting immigrants and not being punished by the powers of the federal government?
We have a rich history and traditions of immigrations of all forms. I mean, that is who we are. And that's why the Statue of Liberty is in our harbor. And, you know, believe it or not, There is no such thing as a law of the sanctuary city. And many people hear the term sanctuary city and they think there's one law. No, there's no law. What we say as a sanctuary city, that if you are within our city, we're going to tell you to utilize the basic services of being in the city. And why? Because if you don't, it'll be disorder. You know, if we were to tell you, don't send your children to school, then your children are going to be home or somewhere where they could be really susceptible to violence, to sex trafficking, to abuse. So we should want children in the school. If you are the victim of a crime, you should want people to report it to the police, no matter what your status is, documented or not documented. If you need medical care, we don't want you to crowd our emergency rooms. We want you to go to the doctor and all of these items. We want you to go to our houses of worship. We want you to utilize the services that your tax dollars are paying for. Because if you go buy a loaf of bread, no one is going to say you're not going to be taxed because you are undocumented. Your tax dollars go into running the city. We collect sales taxes. And so a sanctuary city is really preventing chaos, that if you're here, you should get the services. We don't control who comes across our border, but those who are within our border, we have an obligation to make sure it doesn't create a state of chaos in our city. Because if we didn't put housing for people who come to our country, then they're going to sleep on our streets. They're going to have encampments and shanty towns. No one is going to open businesses in a city that's out of control. So this is a way of controlling something that we don't control, and that is when those come through our cities across our borders. And so we're going to continue to do that. Now, the question is that would the federal government penalize us for doing so? We must make sure that our corporation council is going to protect and defend the rights of our city to get the funding from the federal government. We send more money to Washington, just as in Albany, then we get back in return. And we believe we're supposed to get these dollars, like the $80 million we lost in the FEMA funding. We're saying that those dollars should come back to our city. And that's the job of the Corporation Council, to fight and defend what we believe is deserving of our city. Regardless of how one classifies it, it's still the city of New York, and we are the economic engine of the state and the federal government.
Yeah, I mean, also, I have to imagine, you know, people criticize you for wanting to communicate with the federal government. But I see it as the mayor's job to be communicating with the governor and the president, whether they like them or not like them, because the job should be doing what's best for the city of New York. So, I mean, what do you say to the critics that say, you know, you're working with or you're doing anything with or in support of anything that the federal government is asking of?
It really doesn't make any sense when you're the mayor of the largest city in America and one wants me to go in my corner and pout and say, okay, I'm not going to communicate with the president. And it's about respecting the office. You know, it's not about the individual in the office. It's about respecting the office. When you respect the office, you respect the flag. When you respect the flag, you respect the country that it flies over. That's what it's about. We should always remember that. The American people had a smooth transition of power. We have a president that not only won the electoral vote, he won the popular vote. So the majority of Americans that they said they're going to participate in the electoral process chose President Trump. It's my job to deliver for the city. I did the same thing with President Biden. I traveled to Washington 10 times. I invited the president here to New York City, and we talked about crime. He did some great things with us with crime, appointing an ATF head so that we can get the gun issue under control, what we did around some of our crisis management teams. We had a real partnership around criminal behavior. And I participated with him and I communicated with him. And that's the same with this administration. That's the role and obligation of a mayor. And not only the mayor of New York City, but all mayors should be communicating with the federal authorities to get the resources to their cities. HUD issues, housing issues. How do you deal with crime? How do you deal with, you know, educating our children? A large number of our budget comes from grants from Washington, D.C. And so when people tell me I should not collaborate with the president of the United States, it makes no sense. And it becomes more personal instead of professional. And we must communicate with Washington, D.C., because we're dependent on Washington, D.C., like we're dependent on Albany, where the governor is.
Let's talk back to you. Your plan is to run under independent lines. What can you share about that? Do you have the names of the lines? Is there anything that you can just clarify for people that may not understand when it comes down to the general election what that means?
Yes, so true, and it's so important. Our electoral process allows us to keep our party affiliation. I am a Democrat. I am registered as a Democrat, but it also allows us to run on independent lines. And the line that I'm running on is safe and affordable, two issues that are important to the city. And others have come to me and asked me to run on lines that are important to them. Some want me to run on a line education first. Some want me to run on a line strong business. Others have come and asked me to run on a line to end anti-Semitism. And so people who really want you to run on lines must go out and gather petition, 3,750 qualified petitions. They must gather to place you on a line. Traditionally, it takes almost twice or three times that amount to secure a line. And so people are out right now gathering petitions until I believe the 27th is the last day to have the line that you want brought to the Board of Election. And the Board of Election will determine, you file the petitions and you can have that line. So there's several petitions out there that people want me to run on lines. We're looking at them. I am sponsoring and really have a team out there for Safe and Affordable, but there's others out there, including, as I mentioned, around education, around business, around ending anti-Semitism. But we know we would be on one line, but there may be more based on the petitions that are filed.
Interesting. So more to come, I think, on that. And yes. But also just to clarify, I think for people, which is important, and you'll correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't think I am, is that the primary is ranked choice voting.
Yes, it is.
The general is not.
Yes, which is an important difference that people should know about. In the primaries, you're right, is ranked choice voting. People can choose up to five people, I believe, and they're ranked based on the number of votes that one receives. I would have loved to have participated in the Democratic primary. We collected over 25,000 signatures, but this case just took too long for the judge to make a final decision. And it just didn't have a runway and a time to communicate with voters without this decision hanging over my head. The judge listened to the independent individual he put in place who said the case should be dismissed with prejudice, meaning it won't come back. And after that was done, now we can just focus on running our election. And in spite of what was going on, we never lost focus of what I was elected to do, and that's delivered for the city. And the numbers show. You peel back the noise and look at just the numbers, you'll see the success that we've had in this administration.
You know, one thing I have to ask you is, what do you think when you see polls? Because, you know, I don't want to name names, I don't want to compare you, but you know, how do you look at polls, seeing the history of polling, especially recently? Like, what do you think about it as mayor of New York City?
Well, number one, all experts would tell you polls come, they go, they change. Feelings come and go. You know, I go back to my election in 2021 when I ran against Andrew Yang in the month of February. He was beating me by double digits. In fact, people said he was going to be the next mayor, but we're not calling Mayor Yang. We're calling the Mayor Adams. I told the team, stay focused, no distractions and grind. That has become my trademark. But I think polls can help you get the sentiments and the feelings of voters, what's important to them. But it's very challenging to determine the outcome of races. I told reporters over and over again, this mayor's race is going to be one of the most interesting, different movements, different changes. I think it's going to go down to November. That is when people will have an opportunity to vote for me. And this gave me an opportunity to reintroduce myself to New Yorkers on why they voted for me in the first time. Working class, blue collar mayor, and I've been committed to the city. I think that is important. You should be aware of polls, but you should not focus on polls. You should focus on getting your message out. And that's what I'm going to do. That's what I've always done.
So last question for you, and thank you, you know, so much for your time. But one question I would love to you to answer and really hear from you is, what would you want your legacy to be? People look back on you, forget it this year, forget 4 years from now, forget, you know, one term, two terms, three terms, whatever it is. What in 50 years do you want people to think about when they say Eric Adams, mayor of New York City?
Oh, that's a great question. The city betrayed my family and families like mine when I needed my dyslexia diagnosed. It didn't happen until I got into college. I think about my sister who lost just about all of her childhood because she was raising her five siblings because my mother was being betrayed that she had to work three jobs and didn't get the support that she deserved. I think the betrayal has been even around the food. During those emergency situations when mom had to go and get food from social services, it was food that was feeding that healthcare crisis, processed meat, processed cheese, powdered eggs, powdered milk, all of those items that were just unhealthy. Betrayal around public safety, that, you know, we live in a community that was filled with crime, and betrayal around police enforcement. So we had a city that betrayed people. I want my legacy to be that we had a working class blue collar mayor that dismantled those betrayals. How I'm doing dyslexia screening, so 30 to 40% of our inmates at Rikers Island won't be dyslexic. How I'm feeding children healthy food in school and in our hospitals, doing lifestyle medicine. How we're investing in foster care children, so 600 to 700 won't age out every year without the support. We're paying their college tuition and giving them life coaches until they are 21 and a stipend. Or what we're doing with children in public housing. NYCHA children now have free high-speed broadband where they can do remote learning and their parents can have telemedicine. Of how we're giving people opportunities for employment. We dropped unemployment across this entire city and brought back jobs to the city. And we're now looking at even the cost of medical debt. We're getting ready to excuse millions of dollars of medical debt for those who are experiencing medical debt, which is the number one cause of bankruptcy. What we did yesterday, we announced helping those with student loans, how to navigate the national program, like federal program on retiring student loan for city employees. And we looking to expand that, if possible, to everyday New Yorkers. So all of these things that we're helping people, $30 billion back in the pockets of working class New Yorkers, of all those things that we are doing, that's what I want my legacy to be. That, you know, Eric was just an everyday person that went back and remove barriers that prevented people from having the opportunities that are in front of them. Yes, we're going to do some big ticket items like developing Willis Point, 2,400 units of 100% affordable housing in a soccer stadium, the Brooklyn Marine Terminal, building housing and developing our ports. We're going to do those big ticket items that mayors like to point to and say how they shape the physical structure of a city. But I want to focus on my legacy, how I shape the future of everyday working class people. And we are in the process of doing that.
Mayor Eric Adams, thank you so much.
Thank you, brother.
Thank you for your time. Be well.